Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Fiction draws on the imagination of its author. But even within that very basic idea, Wisconsin writer Andrea Locken had to tap into imaginary in a major way for her new novel. There was her own imagination in crafting the story, which centers on a small-town Wisconsin woman coming to terms with her toddler's imaginary friends.
Not surprisingly, then, the book is called Imaginary Things, and Andrea Locken joins us via Skype from Madison. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Mitch.
Did you have an imaginary friend when you were young?
I wish. I'm envious of children who had imaginary friends. I did not, but I was a very imaginative and creative little girl, and I had something better than an imaginary friend, which was an older sister, and we were very into let's pretend and make believe when we were little girls. Our favorite games were the boxcar children, orphanage, gift shop, and school. You know, kind of that's kind of a typical one. But we were very into let's pretend. So I guess I didn't need an imaginary friend.
Well, so what got you thinking about the imaginary things that are center stage in this book?
My childhood, you know, I was so imaginative. I loved doing pretend play. And I started thinking about what would it be like if a parent could actually see their child's imagination? And what if that imagination was something kind of scary and they didn't know how to handle that? So that was kind of where the premise came from. And then I just had to figure out what to do with this premise that I came up with.
Well, let's set the scene a little. The book plays out mainly in a small town, someplace in Wisconsin, maybe an hour and a half from Milwaukee. How does Anna Jennings end up there?
Well, she's kind of down on her luck. She loses her job, and she's a single mom, and she doesn't have a lot of financial resources. So she ends up having to leave for the sake of her son and move to live with her grandparents, who are really, they've been very supportive of her throughout her whole childhood. And so she moves there, moves in with them, and then has to kind of try to pick up and scrape together the pieces of her life in this small town Wisconsin setting, without a job, without any other really connections besides her grandparents. And she feels kind of trapped and kind of like a failure when she moves there.
Right. She is estranged from her own mother, and she is also the mom of a 4-year-old boy.
She is. So her own family situation. So her grandparents are wonderful, supportive people, but she doesn't know her father, and her mother is definitely not a supportive or nurturing type. So she doesn't have the support there. And she had a child very young. She was 18 years old when she had her 4-year-old son, and she's estranged from the father. And so she definitely doesn't have a lot of support in that way. That's why it's kind of useful for her to be moving back in with her grandparents, even though it makes her feel kind of like she's failed at life.
Right. This is not the first time she has lived there and lived with her grandparents.
No, she was sent there when she was a little girl, when she was 7. And when she was 8, her mom was kind of trying to get rid of her for the summers. And she unloaded her on the grandparents. But Anna actually had a wonderful time living there because she was very imaginative and very creative. And there was a boy next door, Jamie, who was very fun to play with. So Anna actually has some fond memories of the place.
And I don't think it's giving too much away to say that she starts seeing things around her 4-year-old son not long after they arrive and figures out pretty quickly what she is seeing.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, because I think it's actually included on the synopsis of the book that what Anna is seeing is dinosaurs. Her son is imagining these prehistoric giant lizards and they're his imaginary friends. I won't give too much away about, you know, their characteristics and if they're, you know, what their personalities are like. But she's very scared initially when she starts seeing these, and she thinks she's losing her mind. She thinks maybe there are giant lizards roaming rural Wisconsin. So it takes her a while to figure out what in fact she is seeing, that they are somehow related to David, and are they stalking him, or are they, you know, his own imagination?
And we should say it frightens her a lot. The dinosaurs don't frighten David at all.
No, they don't. He, in fact, enjoys seeing them and playing with them, which we find out a little bit later in the book.
Right. But that is why they are his imaginary friends.
Exactly. And what 4-year-old boy wouldn't want to have a T-Rex as an imaginary friend?
But as we say, Anna is afraid of them. And in fact, one of the central themes of this book is fear. What else makes Anna afraid?
Well, she has a kind of a difficult past with her ex, the father of David. Again, trying not to reveal too much and give away too much, he has some mental illness issues, and she had to get a restraining order from him, and she now has sole custody of David. So that was something that she certainly is fearful of. She's a little bit worried that maybe David's imaginary friends are an indication that he might have the same mental illness problems when he grows up. So she's a little bit worried about heredity. She's a little bit worried about, being alone and being on her own, being a good mom, doing enough for David. I think lots of common fears that parents have.
Well, and one of the things that strikes me is that comes in contrast to, say, her grandmother or her would-be boyfriend, Jamie, her friend from a long time ago. Anna does not really allow herself a break, whereas some of the people around her see fear, but they cut themselves some slack.
They do. I think Duffy, Anna's grandmother, is a great example. She's a character who, for all intents and purposes, is pretty fearless. She speaks her mind. She, just is this kind of great, loud character. but as we find out, she also has some of her own fears. For example, she's somebody who really doesn't like to leave town. She's kind of isolated herself in her little town of Salzburg, Wisconsin. And she doesn't really like to drive or leave it. So we see somebody who's very brave and, just this great champion for her loved ones. But she herself has her own crosses that she's bearing as well.
But she is well familiar with those crosses.
She is.
and speaking of Duffy, obviously Anna is the central character here. But as you wrote this book, did you find yourself especially attached to any of the other people in her world?
I feel this way about my first book, The Repeat Year, as well. I always feel so close to my characters. I feel almost like they're my own friends and family. And when I finish the book, I'm kind of sad to see them go. I kind of hope that they're, still doing well, and, I wish them well. But yeah, they feel like friends and family to me. I very much love Anna's grandparents. Duffy and Winston, they're the kind of grandparents that I wish I had had. I just think they're fun, they're loving, they're flawed, but they're good people. Good down to earth Wisconsin, salt of the earth.
I was just going to use that term.
So I'm very attached to them. I'm very attached to David, her 4-year-old son. I think, he's just such a fun little boy. I love his imagination and his personality. I even love his naughtiness. I just think he's a delightful character. Of course, I have a soft spot for Anna and her love interest, the boy next door, Jamie, I think is a really fascinating character, too. And I think he's deep down a very good person. So, yeah, I like the whole cast of characters. I think they're a fun group of people.
Well, and so, one can't help but notice as this book was coming together for you, you were moving across the state and having a baby of your own. Maybe a case of life imitating art here.
Yes, in a lot of ways. Although I will be honest, I wrote this book several years before I became a mom. And so, you know, at the heart of this book is motherhood. And yet it was something that I hadn't experienced yet. And so I had to imagine it for myself. And I have to say, it's just as wonderful as I imagined it. It's just as surprising and exciting and, you know, full of struggles and challenges as I imagined it.
Well, and in all seriousness, I wonder if you found yourself evaluating your relationship with family and maybe your expectations for parenthood, you know, as you got this book ready for publication.
I did a little bit. I was kind of considering, you know, how Anna is hard on herself. She doesn't really cut herself slack, as you said earlier, because she thinks that she's failing as a mother, and how we do have these expectations of ourselves to be these perfect parents, to always have it together. Of course, Anna does have some problems. You know, she does face some challenges as a young single parent. But ultimately, she's a very loving mother, and she's doing the best she can for her son in a lot of ways. So it did make me think I need to, you know that there's no such thing as a perfect mom, and that we all do the best that we can.
You mentioned your own imagination when you were young, and then Davy's imagination in this book, and we learn something about Anna's imagination as we read the book. One of the things that I noticed in this book is that, you know, none of these characters is turning over their imagination to an electronic device. And I guess the question I have is, you know, do you see that looming as a challenge in your own motherhood, trying to raise a creative kid who can really pass the time in her own mind?
It is kind of scary the way that we have so many other things to occupy us externally, that I do worry that, you know, this next generation of kids won't be able to look internally for, you know, creativity. While I think there's so many great games and TV shows and apps and things that will, you know, inspire creativity and imagination with kids, you know, sometimes there's something to be said for just having, you know, you and your next door neighbor, or you and your imaginary friend, or your sister, or your brother, and just nothing else to do. You know, you're on your front porch, or you're in your backyard, and you've got some dolls and some stuffed animals there, and you're coming up with a game. And obviously books were something that really inspired my sister and I too. As I said, we loved playing the boxcar children. So I definitely want my daughter to be a reader. We've already started reading to her, even though she's only 7 weeks old. I definitely want to encourage that kind of imaginative play that takes her outdoors, and that, you know, she's not always connected to the internet or to some sort of device. So, I very much valued that in my childhood. My husband did too. So I hope that we can instill that kind of imagination in our children as well.
Obviously, that kind of imagination is good preparation for being a writer.
It is. It so is. And as a little girl, I was an avid reader and writer. I actually decided in the third grade that I wanted to be a published author. And I, you know, I kept stories, notebooks full of stories in my third grade elementary school class. I had a teacher who had a writer's workshop, and we actually got to write and publish our stories. And that was kind of how it all started for me.
And now, with all things coming full circle, are you getting any writing done with a newborn around the house?
No. You know, when it comes to, should I take a nap, or should I write something, or should I shower? Usually the shower or the nap wins. But I am hoping, once we get on a little bit more of a regular schedule, to go back to the third novel that I started while I was pregnant. So I do have something in the works. I think it'll take me a little while to finish the draft.
Well, and as long as you're cutting yourself some slack here.
Yes, I've kind of given myself a free pass to not feel too guilty about not writing in this time.
Well, good for you. And congratulations on both the new baby and the new book. Andrea Locken, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Andrea Locken's new novel is called Imaginary Things. It's her second book following The Repeat Year. Locken will talk about the book tomorrow at noon at UW Waukesha, where she teaches undergraduate writing. She'll also do a reading at Boswell Books on April 20th.